When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Sizzle your way into the new year with help from Every Plate. Add a 10-ounce ranch steak to your weekly order for just $1 per box while your subscription is active. Get $1.49 per meal plus $1 steaks for life with the code 49POA at everyplate.com/podcast. That's everyplate.com/podcast. Use the code 49POA. What's up, Airheads? Welcome back. We're in the virtual Airstream studios. I want to actually start with what you just said, because I can't not, if that's all right. You were looking through some airmail to read later, so we could. Somebody has alerted us to the fact that apparently Ron DeSantis is advertising on our podcast, so that's fun. I feel like he ain't doing his research well enough. I mean, of course we're not, but we're stupid, so that checks
it's
out.
It's our friend Donnie that wrote in, just to give him some credit for pointing it out.
Yeah. So, you know, the way ads work differently. We read some of them. Then there's these other, we call them other ads.
They're targeted ads from Google. So I assume Donnie lives in Florida, or no, actually right. DeSantis is all over now. Like, he's wanting to be the primary guy. So
yeah, but that ain't gonna happen. But yeah,
those are targeted, like inserted ads that we don't have. I think they're called dynamic inserts. Like, we don't have anything to do with those. It's just that because our page is monetized, we'll put ads in there, and it targets them toward, it picks the ads based on you. That's why I just assume Donnie lives in Florida. It's not based on our show.
Right. Yeah. So I just want people to know that, you know, if you hear DeSantis pitching or whatever on here, it weren't us.
But we will take his money, I guess, if it's going to be, you know, if anything. Like, it sucks, but I don't think they just pick those, you know?
Yeah. So you told me earlier I was going to love your topic today. Are you going to, like, surprise me with it later?
I'll tell you right now. I'll give you a hint. If you're looking for me, you can find me on the block disobeying the law.
With a gun in my drawers.
We're going to be talking about Akon.
Akon? A little bit. Holy shit. I know that he's wild as hell, right?
He is.
Well, this is going to be a wild episode, a wild juxtaposition of an episode. I got a couple of things up top, and then I just want to, I ain't going too in depth or whatever, but I'm going to talk a little bit about Tennessee Williams. So
nice.
Tennessee Williams and Akon.
Is this from our glass menagerie conversation? Yeah. It's yes. Funny. I've been, I went.
It was on Well Read Podcast, just so y'all know. It's a crossover event.
Yeah, and I thumbed through. I buy a lot of pocket plays when I go to used bookstores and stuff. Like, they're just the little, like, they're teeny tiny, you know, easily readable pocket plays, because I want to learn how to write those. And when you said that, I went to my thing of pocket plays, and I realized that I had Streetcar Named Desire, The Glass Menagerie, and all these Tennessee Williams that I wanted to start reading to talk about him on this podcast. But I'm glad you're talking about him.
Yeah, well, look, if you're wanting to, like, do a deep dive, because I had the idea, like, last night. I was like, oh, Tennessee Williams, he fits POA's brand very well. Right. I could talk about Tennessee Williams. Then I was taking a shower, you know, before doing the show, and I started thinking, like, ah, man, I don't know. I feel like it's almost like, because I've actually never even seen A Streetcar Named Desire. I've seen The Glass Menagerie before. But, like, I'm just not that. I started thinking, it's like, I know he's a legend and whatnot, but I'm not really that familiar with his actual work.
Right.
And so I don't know, you know, I started to have second thoughts about talking about him without actually, you know, because if we start talking about Quentin Tarantino or something, I can do that. You know what I mean? Because I'm familiar with his oeuvre.
We can do that if you want to.
But Tennessee Williams, I'm not. But still, right. We'll just give an overview of his whole thing, because he definitely does fit the brand. But before any of that, got a couple other things here. I'm going to share this screen for you. I'll try to, like, narrate this a little bit for people that are only listening, but I want you to
Ooh, here we go.
Yeah, but well, anyway. So this is on Reddit. It's like a TikTok video that's now on Reddit, and it's the caption on it says ordering most expensive drinks. This is at a bar in New Orleans. What the hell?
I too follow the stupid food subreddit. It's a great one.
It ain't working. No. It's okay.
Give it a second.
Just don't hit. Just don't hit.
That's what Granny used to do at the TV when it would mess up. She'd go, get on back now.
Yeah, you ever successfully Fonzie'd anything?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
You know?
Oh, a jukebox one time. Yeah, I've Fonzie'd a lot of things. Like, that's a Cho thing. You know what I mean?
I know it is. Well, I was about to say, I figured you were going to say yes, and you could already guess that I've never done that. It's never worked for me, not once.
You broke the thing even further when you tried to Fonzie it.
Yeah, I had these big meat hooks for one thing, you know. But anyway, let's try this one more again. Sorry about the technical issues we have in here. But yeah, it says ordering expensive drinks. This is in New Orleans. Let's turn the volume on.
Oh, here we go.
3 gallon hurricane. How much is that? $2.75. Let me get it. Hold on, wait a minute. This is the cup.
Look at that cup.
Hold on.
3 gallon hurricane in New Orleans.
Go all in.
The leader of Pat O'Brien's rum.
Rum.
You can't get this rum anywhere else.
Okay, only here.
That rum don't hit.
Only in New Orleans.
No, it don't.
That's the house rum there.
That's right here. Gross.
What I'm talking about. Hold on, wait a minute. Wait, I think you missed a drop. That's what I'm talking about. There we go.
Right, is this three whole bottles?
Damn.
Two Ooh. Whole fifths of rum
Let's
on
go,
ice.
Baby. It's Friday night.
Jeez.
We outside. Okay, the cocktail mix. What flavor is this?
This is passion fruit.
Oh, passion fruit. Shout out to Drake. Those 2 liters of rum,
Jesus.
2 liters of mix. Easy, easy.
Stir it up. Whole cup of cherries on top.
No, you gotta have, you know, you gotta be healthy.
3 orange slices.
The oranges, Four. Baby. All right. Okay, here we go. Here we go. Here we go. Let's
All right,
do it, baby.
Watch this part, Joe.
Please.
Your daughter's prom dress. Wow. I'm watching my figure.
Oh my lord.
Yeah. Come on now.
I know, yeah, I know. That was the kicker
just,
there.
Was
right. For anybody that's not just listening, you may have heard that sound at the end was him pouring the $275 3 gallon hurricane directly into the trash after taking like a sip or two of it and flossing on everybody. Apparently, I don't know this. I don't follow this dude, obviously, but apparently that's what he do. He goes around all these places that cater to like stupid people who think they know how rich people act, but they
right.
don't, you know? And does that type of shit. Like he buys steaks covered in
gold
leaf and shit and
throws
jerks himself off over it. Right. Yeah. And I don't know if he always throws them away, but anyway,
well,
that just don't hit for me in the Supreme. But also, bro, good for that bar, I guess. $275.
Yeah.
Those 2 bottles of rum, what do they cost the bar? What's that cost the bar? $12?
Easily.
$15 with the mix thrown in, maybe $18 total max. And they charge $2.75 for it. And that's all it is just rum and a pre-made cocktail mix in a big ass glass.
I hope that guy still tips, you know, and in that case, I'm like, whatever. But like, I'm number one. The first thing I wanted to point out is that, like, you're right. That is the well drink. That's the well rum. But like, with as much as drinks are marked up in big cities and like popular drink cities like New Orleans, I'd say pound for pound, that wasn't even that ridiculously expensive. Because if you made a bunch of individual drinks with that same shit in it, it would probably be $275. You know what I mean? But
yeah.
Here's what pisses me off is like, I'm actually fine if you can find a way to point out that all of this either corporate greed or consumer dumbassery is stupid. But like, it's... And I'm not even sure I'm mad that you're wasting the alcohol because it was bullshit. But like with the steak, it's like, okay, bro, instead of throwing it away, why don't you, and I'm not trying to get up on a soapbox here, but like, why don't you make the point that it's stupid and then go give it to a homeless person or something? You know what
yeah,
I mean?
I know for a fact that this dude does not hit, but to be completely fair to him, I don't know that he ends every single one of his videos with him throwing the thing away. I don't know that he always does that. Like the other, the food and stuff, the gold steaks and shit, he might eat those and poop them out later. I don't know. But speaking of pooping them out later, there was something I wanted to tell you about also. Just file it under the category, shoo wee, past was wild. Right?
Eating poop?
Yeah, not oh, kind what? Of. Not, well, not like.
Scheisse. No,
not exactly. But in the 19th century, so in the 1800s, there was a very popular GI remedy, right? Called an antimony pill,
mm-hmm.
right? Or also known as the everlasting pill. So what this was it was just basically a little bullet made from antimony, which I'd never, it might be antimony. I'm not familiar with this shit, but it's some kind of metallic compound.
I'm pro-mony.
I'm not anti-mony. Pro-mony for show. It's on the periodic table and all that. It's just a little pill made out of this metal that you swallow.
Mm-hmm.
And that metal don't hit for your body. So it gets down into your guts and like cleans you out. You take it and you start purging pretty much immediately.
Because you're being poisoned. Right?
Yes, you're poisoning yourself with this metal and you start purging. So it's like, oh, man, I'm a little backed up. Bring me my poop bullet, right? And then you just start, you swallow it and start, it starts coming out both ends, I guess, or whatever. And you're like, all right, nice and liberated now. You know, John Wayne could have used this, I guess. But why do you think they called it the everlasting pill?
Let me guess. It's because the metal that is in said bullet that you eat, while some of its stuff can seep out into your body, your stomach acid isn't strong enough to completely digest it. So it stays in there forever, slowly leaking out toxins into you and making you shit yourself.
No, you were close at first, but, you do poop it out. You poop it completely out.
You get a scar from it. It cuts your asshole.
No, you don't digest it at all. You poop it out. You know, the metal itself poisons you, but you don't break down the metal at all. So you poop out the same pill you swallowed, except now it's in your poop, right? But
I know why they sell it again.
Yeah, well, they don't sell it. Just take it again. They keep using it. You know, 1800s, dude, you're a peasant. You know, apothecary stuff is hard to come by. You know, medical care, like, you know how expensive leeches was?
Yeah.
I mean, they were probably quite a bit, compared to what a peasant had. Three cabbages and a fucking, goose head or whatever for one set of leeches. So, you had to stretch it as much as you could. And so they had these pills, these metal bullets that made you poop. They'd fish it out of their own poop.
Of course.
Clean it off down there.
Well, you'd hear it hit the porcelain bowl that you shat into, I guess, back then. Right.
Save it and use it again. One other quick note. They also, because these were everlasting, they never went bad, they never degraded. They also were often family heirlooms passed down, literally passed down by generations. Or also one peasant family would share the same poop bullet, right? They had one poop bullet for the whole mud house, right? That had eight kids in it and they're illiterate parents and they have one poop bullet between them and they're drinking dirt water all day. So their guts stay fucked up. Right. So they just swallow, poop, clean it off, pass it to your brother. He swallows it. He poops, clean it up, and this on and on from there. So everybody's swallowing each other's poop pills.
Well, I've been
all live long day. So what do you think about that?
Well, I've been thinking about the goose pluckers all wrong, because the way that I've always envisioned them is like, here's a group of people that don't need help having diarrhea. You know what I mean? Right. Like, I just figured that I honestly figured that things were running straight through them all the time. But, it's also a part of being ill that you get backed up. So it makes sense.
Right. So, but yeah. No, that don't hit. How much money would it take for you to swallow something that somebody else had pooped out if it had been
the person
washed
that
off?
It?
It's a good question. Drew pooped it out.
You take my family dog. Take him just like, put that bullet in a gun and shoot me in the head instead. How about that?
Yeah. What if it was like some random stranger? Well, what if it was Margot Robbie who pooped it out?
Yeah. I mean, do I get to meet her?
No. It's verified that this bullet was pooped out of Margot Robbie, and now you got to swallow it.
Is there money on the table? Like, I can't.
Yeah, saying, like, what's your, you know, what would your price be? I would expect you to just be like, hell yeah, let's give it here. You know,
do people find, because I'd say the more the money in these scenarios, the more the money goes up, you start throwing back another, you're like, okay, well, if it's that much though, everyone has to know you did it. Does anyone know that I did it?
Well, let's say no. Well, let's see what your price is.
I would do it for 6 months of my mortgage because I could really use that. I've been wanting to write a novel, and I think that would be enough time to get started on it. And so, yeah, I would I'd do it for 6 months of my mortgage, which I live in North Georgia. That's actually not that much. I could probably get the whole year.
What an origin story that would be for, like, if the novel that you wrote ended up being some smash hit that started a franchise or something,
yeah.
And then later, you know, 50 years down the road, somebody's looking at the Wikipedia page for it, yeah. And it's like,
no,
he got the money for this by swallowing a poop bullet?
Yeah. I would save that for
unorthodox.
I would save that story. If nobody has to find it out, I would save that story for when I'm 80 something years old and I'm doing whatever the equivalent of WTF with Marc Maron is at that time, I would be the last thing I said, and I would never do another interview again. And I would just go home and die.
You mean you plug your stuff? Thanks for having me. By the way, I got all that money by swallowing a poop bullet. And then you just get up and walk out. Yeah.
And then go, it was for Margot Robbie though. And then I just fucking shoot myself right on camera.
Yeah. Okay. So 6 months of your mortgage. What if you had to, like, okay, that's if nobody has to know. It changes for you if everybody knows. I'm
a little bit. It definitely changes for me. And it's not because I think people will think, oh, he's gross for eating Margot Robbie's poop bullet. It's that, like, I think there's a lot of people that would go, oh, yeah, this guy, he'll do anything so he doesn't have to work. You know what I mean? Because, like, that would be it for me. Like, you know what I'm saying? Because, like, there's so many people, and I'm not going to get into the weeds of what all it takes for me and you to appear to be the lackadaisical motherfuckers that we appear to be. But, like, we work really hard. Like, both of us work really hard. But, like, the end result looks like it was fun to do, which oftentimes it is. So people were like, god damn it, if all I had to do was sit around making fucking videos all day, I guess I'd make, you know, money too. And I've always had that chip on my shoulder of, like, anytime somebody says that, I want to go, you know what, man, I agree that what I do is fun, but, like, where do you work? Let's trade jobs for 2 weeks and tell me if you're not fucking at least mentally exhausted. You know what I mean? And so that would just be more fuel to the fire of, like, this fucking guy's never worked an honest day in his life. He just fucking lives in his parents' basement and eats goddamn Margot Robbie's poop bullets every 6 months and writes a fucking book.
I mean, if, you know, yeah, if it was, like, repeatable, that'd be a pretty good little scheme there.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, you know,
just pay your whole mortgage
out,
off.
Give it back to her.
Yeah, but then,
she wouldn't want to.
Then she'd be eating your poop bullet.
Yeah.
And that ain't going to happen.
There's not a price for that.
Not a price. There ain't enough money on God's green earth to make her eat your poop bullet.
She could have several different poop bullets, I guess, and, you know, keep. I would, look, if I did it once, I would do it an infinite amount of times, because it's like you're never not going to be someone who ate Margot Robbie's poop bullet, so who gives a shit if you did it again? No one's going to go, god damn, when you'd only done it 5 times I was on your team, but 10, you're disgusting. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't even know how, like, where people would rank eating a poop bullet in the day that we live in, with the stuff you can find on the internet and everything. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like we've talked before, I think, on the show about mukbang and stuff. And,
yeah,
like, where fat people just, like, gorge on disgusting food on camera and people watch them because it hits for them people, for some reason.
Skinny Asians do it too. And I mean, a little bit when it's noodles.
Okay. That's literally just, I mean, well, I guess that is what it is. Right. That is how it started, was like weirdos like Cho like to watch Asian women eat noodles. Right?
I never sought it out. It just came across. I was like, what is this bullshit? And then it kept coming up and like the Asians were hot and like they were slurping on noodles and it kind of hit for me.
And, but it's now it's morphed into like a whole extremist wild ass thing that in my opinion does not hit.
No, it don't.
It's like people, dude, you look at the YouTube thumbnails and stuff or something, because I've looked at a morbid curiosity and like, it just, they're like, well, you know, they got like a gallon of spaghetti hanging out of their mouth and they're just hugely fat and red faced and they look like they're choking. They got tears in their eyes.
Yeah.
It's like five spaghetti gallon challenge. Fucking, it's got 3 million views or whatever. And it's like, why? What? I don't understand this world that we live in, but
I don't either. And you know, and like, that's my thing is that the way that we look at those people, people would look at me for making money off the poop bullet, even though in my opinion, the poop bullet is actually less disgusting. Cause like I'd wash it off.
That's kind of what I was saying. I'm saying like, I don't even know how outrageous it would be to eat a poop bullet in 2024.
Right.
With everything else that's out there, you know, might not even really move the needle that much. I mean, also, we're neglecting to mention, but she ate it when it was new. Margot Robbie had a new, unused poop bullet.
Poop bullet. Yeah, it was just a bullet when she ate it.
That was just old-timey, like, you know, she was just doing old-timey medicine stuff.
Right. She was preparing for a role. You know?
Yeah. All right, well.
It's a good-looking gal, I'll tell you, Trey.
Who, that Margot Robbie?
I'm not afraid to say it, you know. Might not be politically correct, but Lord God, that's a good-looking gal.
Oh, yeah. No, she's a looker, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Going
all Fargo on me, are you?
Yeah, I've been watching Fargo lately.
How's the new season?
Okay. It's okay, then. No, it's pretty. Okay. No, it's great. No, it's great.
I'm watching season two right now.
It's that there is my favorite season of my favorite single season of any television show ever made. Don't you know?
Sure is shaping up to be that way. I'll tell you that much right now.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic. Anyway, let's talk about Tennessee Williams for a little bit, I suppose.
Can I do something real quick before you do that? I had one more thing, but it fits more in this part of the show than it would before. I just wanted your opinion on something. I'm going to share my screen real quick. Here we go. Tell me if you can see that. Can you?
It's coming up now. Hang on. Yeah.
This is King Charles' official portrait. He's had portraits before, but back when he was Prince Charles. So this is like his official, all right, this decaying portrait, right? And I mean, you know, as far as portrait goes, it looks nice and stuff like that. But something that I had never considered with this particular portrait has caused an uprising amongst some people in the UK, and I saw people were pissed about it, and I was just looking at the portrait. I was like, what the Andrew's not in it, like what the fuck are people, you know, mad about? Well, I didn't consider this, like the king's portrait not only is done to like show on, you know, as his picture for like when they're doing media or whatever, but like that portrait gets hung up in every school, in every, you know, government building, in all of their colonies and shit like that. Cause like, I remember, you know, going to, we went on a cruise one time, we got off to go to this bar and I'm seeing fucking Queen Elizabeth everywhere. And I'm like, what the fuck? Oh, right. Duh. That makes sense. Anyways, this portrait.
Where were you at?
I don't remember, frankly. I found cocaine somewhere in the Caribbean. Immediately.
Do they still own places in the Caribbean now to this day?
I guess they own this.
They don't still own Jamaica, do they? Like,
it wasn't Jamaica. I'm pretty sure Jamaica's independent, but like wherever it was, there was that lady on the wall. But anyways, it estimates that this particular portrait is going to end up representing $8 million in taxpayers' money because it has to be put up everywhere. And that, I was like, God damn, I didn't really think about it like that. That's just crazy to me.
It's going to cost them $8 million to hang up that picture everywhere it needs to be hung up. That picture needs to be like physically reproduced and mounted on a wall $8 million worth of times.
Yep. That is, I mean, that's what I read. It could be wrong, but that's what I read.
That's a shitload of pictures, bro.
It is a shitload of pictures. And also, though, I mean,
how much do you think it takes to hang up a picture one time?
I don't know. That's what I was thinking.
You got to do it, print it off. It's got to be high quality. I bet they're using only frames that hit.
That's what I'm saying. Because, like, when I was a kid, I don't know.
Probably not in like a fucking Leeds post office or something. They probably don't have an ornate, elaborate fucking frame for that portrait. You know, I mean, I used to work for the federal government. When I worked there, we had Barack Obama and Joe Biden on the wall. Boo, hiss. Yeah. They were just they didn't even have a frame. It was a frame, but it was so thin. You know what I'm saying? Like, it didn't look like a frame. It just looked like a mounted picture on the wall in the lobby of the federal building when you walked in.
I'm still sure that costs a lot of money.
Why?
There's a bunch of money. Well, that's right, actually, because we don't do it in all our schools, I don't think. You know what I mean?
I don't know if we do it in all our schools,
but over there, dude, like, if they're putting it in every goddamn school. Do what now?
A public school should have a picture of the president in it, shouldn't it?
When I was a kid, I don't remember ever seeing Slick Willie on the wall. Now, Bush, they probably hung that one up.
Man, I think that...
I believe you, but I don't remember it. You know? Granted, I didn't
the
pay
soul
attention.
Food place in Salina, they got a picture of the president on the wall. Still Obama, you know, and will only ever be Obama. Always hit for me because it's like that's the power of fucking frog legs and cornbread and shit. You know what I mean? In Salina, Tennessee, this is the most popular restaurant in town. There's only like three restaurants in town, and two of them won't believe me probably, but two of them are fucking head to toe legit and pretty fire. The barbecue place and the soul food place. Shout out to those places, Del Hall One Stop and Ollie's. If you want to know the names, if you're ever in Salina, don't be. But if you happen to be taken against your will to Salina, I recommend eating at one of those two locations. But anyway, Ollie's, the soul food place, people fucking love it. People drive from like an hour away to go there and eat and stuff. It's always busy as hell. Parking lot's always packed. He got a big elephant out front.
Nice.
It's the home of the elephant burger, all this shit. And displayed prominently on the wall in there is a picture of Barack Obama. Because, you know, you'll be utterly unsurprised to learn that Ollie's soul food joint is a black-owned business.
What?
Black-owned and operate. Yeah, right. And so, Yeah, that's what happens whenever my buddy Skybone walks through the door there.
Confetti.
It's a little like bell on the door. You know what I mean? When you walk in, it's actually those sirens at Ollie's.
That's fucking great.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of the hunt. But are you getting the thrill of the best deals? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Macy's, Adidas, Walmart, Nike, Wine.com, Samsung, Lenovo, Sephora, and more. And even stack sales on top of cashback. It's easy to use, and you get your cash back through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's R-A-K-U-T-E-N.
But anyways.
Anyway, yeah.
Because okay, so like, you know, the president over here, like, we respect them or whatever, but we don't have to hold them in quite the amount of reverence as you do a deity graced fucking king, blood king. So yeah, I assume that over there they're not just like, yeah, print them off just like in elementary schools when we'd have the poster of a frog, you know, with one arm on a branch and at the bottom it says, hang in there, buddy. Things are getting better. Like, it's probably going to have to be all painting with the goddamn frame. But, like, it's $8 million motherfucking dollars. And, like, I keep going back to this thing that these dudes were telling me about when we were over there in Stratford-upon-Avon, where we wrote our book, Round Here and Over Yonder, available wherever you get your books. And I keep getting conflicted because I don't want to be this way because it goes against the fiber of my beliefs. You know what I mean? It makes me feel fucking like a pro-monarchist. But when those dudes were explaining to me, and then I then looked it up and I was like, shit, that's actually true, about how much money the monarchy brings in for the UK because of tourism and blah, 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 and all this shit, I'm like, well, God damn it, you know, whatever. Like, they're still, I guess, per those stats and everything, better off than if they weren't doing shit. But I don't like the you understand what I'm saying? It's very conflicting.
Yeah. I mean, you know, hell, I think it's kind of neat, I guess, that kings still exist. We're Americans, so we don't have to deal with them. Or, you know what I mean? Like, we just get to spectate. I love
spectating.
I think it's so stupid. The people, especially in this country, who are obsessed with them. Right. I mean, no offense to your mother, but
or our show in general.
Yeah, but I mean, anytime we ever talk about them. Anytime we ever talk about them, we're usually taking the piss out of them.
That's what I'm saying.
Or shitting on them a little bit. Well, that ain't the same thing.
I'm saying the word obsessed is not right because I'm in a way obsessed with them, but I don't revere them.
Right. But, you know, I'm okay with them still existing, I guess, from afar because it's interesting. Anytime I hear some other countries like still got a king, I'm like, damn, there's still kings out here. How about that?
Please write in your thoughts on what we just said to puttingonairs@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.
I looked it up about the president pictures, and it says it depends on district policy, and it varies county to county, state to state. Some schools put up pictures of the president, and some don't. It's not a federal mandate. You don't have to. But any federal building like I used to work in, you got to have a picture of the president.
For sure.
Anyway, Tennessee Williams, I thought we'd start with this. So before we even get started, I'm going to go ahead and tell y'all. His answer to this question is not satisfying. It's not upsetting, but like, this isn't leading to some big, wow, that's super hit moment. I just really like Dick Cavett's question. And I thought it was
a good
place to start. The main reason that I am doing this is just cause I thought it'd be interesting to, you know, see Tennessee Williams and hear him speak, whatever. So this is him on Dick Cavett. This is, let's watch this one little exchange and we'll talk about him for a second.
Is it being folky again?
Williams, and you can go on and on and on. Eudora Welty, and thousands of great writers come out of the South. And not that many come out
of the South. You said playwriters come out of the South.
Playwrights, fiction writers.
Writers, yes. Yeah, how many playwrights come out of the South?
Well, yeah.
I'm trying to think of one.
Another Southern playwright.
Yeah.
But just writing, it seems to be that it's in the soil or in the land or in the... in the water, something that people write better. People from the South talk better than people from the North.
Hey, what now, Dick Cavett?
Write about in the South. People ask me that so often, but I can't explain it.
Nobody can.
No.
I would have given the same answer if I was in Tennessee Williams' position. If somebody asked me, I would have been like, hell, I don't know. But
you
Dick
would
Cavett
think that he would have
there, though.
Yeah, Dick Cavett was spitting like a motherfucker, but you would think that Tennessee Williams, because this wasn't early in his career, you would kind of think that he would have an answer locked and loaded for that.
It might be one of those questions that's like always annoyed him or something, right? You know what I mean? Like, because he's gotten it so much. I don't know, but like, I'm going to circle back to Tennessee Williams in a minute, but Dick Cavett there, the writer thing, everybody knows that. In the South, it's like the only two professions really that I can think of. And I guess comedian is kind of one of them, sort of, but on a much, not really. There's like notable Southern comedians or whatever. Us not among this present company excluded, but like, the only two real professions where you're allowed to have a Southern accent and it's like, oh, I bet he hits at that job is lawyer and writer, I think.
Yeah. Rock and roll, maybe too.
Which is interesting. Well, yeah, if you don't like country music artists, whatever, obviously, but like smart people stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? Yes. Okay. Fair.
Like writers are smart. Lawyers are smart.
Yep.
And they, writers and lawyers, are both still allowed to be Southern, and people will still think, not only think they're smart, but think like, oh, you better watch out for this motherfucker. I bet he goes hard. Like, if you, you know, if you hear a lawyer with a Southern accent, you're like, I don't want no part of that smoke in the courtroom.
It really depends on the specific Southern accent, because I would also throw in professor there if it was like a Savannah accent, you know?
Yeah, like an American history professor who talks like that or something. So, but Dick Cavett also said, though, he was giving us a little too much shine, I thought, because the writer thing, everybody knows that, and it's well-earned and deserved. But he said to people in the South, talk better. And I was like, what? Since when? Was this before we transitioned into like sounding and exclusively like cartoon possums? Because you know what I mean? Like we did used to have that, like, I mean,
aristocratic.
But see, that's the when the debutantes was talking like this and all that. Mm-hmm. Like, was the people like me who cleaned their shitters out, did they still sound like me or even dumber? You know what I mean? Did like, the lowly, dumb, fucking sharecropper peasants back then, they didn't talk like that, did they?
I would say that Dick Cavett's entire exposure to the Southern accent would be
Gone with the Wind.
I was going to suggest Gone with the Wind or in media. And like, this kind of was like, you know, who knows if Deliverance had come out at the time of this interview. I don't know.
Probably, like, it had to be around then. Hee Haw, I bet, was on already.
Sure, but like, or Dick Cavett talking to he only talked to esteemed people. So he would talk to an esteemed person from the South and they would sound, you know, like that or whatever. That's the only thing I can think of, is like that there weren't as many local news station clips going viral where a redneck's talking about staying in his trailer during a goddamn tornado. And he exclusively heard, like you said, the Scarlett O'Hara type, the Clark Gable type in Gone with the Wind or whatever. So that's my only thought, because
So I know this ain't cool or whatever, but you know why I wanted to look up an interview with Tennessee Williams, right? Or what I was really hoping for.
You wanted to see if he talked about some gay shit.
I wanted to see if he talked like this. He's like, we are pretty good writers down in the South now, Dick Cavett. Yeah. You know, like, that's why.
Yeah.
I was surprised that he didn't, but I was like, if he had a talk like that, how amazing would that have been? Since it's kind of come up on the show recently.
In my brain, when I've thought about Tennessee Williams talking, it's always been that. And I'm ashamed, but like, it has always been that. Like your Uncle Tim, but up a little bit.
Right. So Tennessee Williams was fucking born and raised in Mississippi, not just Mississippi, but a goddamn Episcopalian church in Mississippi. That's where he was raised at. And his daddy named Cornelius Coffin, like
get
he
out
get
of here.
Buried in. Cornelius Coffin Williams, otherwise known as C.C. Williams, was a drunk and a traveling shoe salesman, right? That's a little slice of Americana right there. I can't decide if I think being a traveling shoe salesman in Mississippi in the 20s and teens and 20s would be like business is a booming or it's just the worst market on earth. Has pictures guy walking around is, y'all got shoes? What shoes? You know, whatever.
Right.
It's like, you ain't gonna believe this shit. Look at this. Like Tennessee Williams' dad introduced shoes to Mississippi.
Right.
At least parts of it, you know, but still spread everywhere in Mississippi, as I understand.
You'd think, because here's how you decide to be a shoe salesman in Mississippi. You're walking around, you go, God damn, ain't nobody wearing shoes. And so you're like, there's a demand here. But then you find out that that's by choice and they didn't want those shoes.
Yeah, his daddy was an East Tennessee hillbilly who was, you know, like I said, drunk and violent and, you know, would tune you up here and there. And his mama, him, his brother, his sister when he was a kid, he got diphtheria. I don't know. Is diphtheria still kicking?
That's why they named him that. That's why they named him that. They was getting ready to name him. They said, ooh, Charles Coffin.
Yeah, no, Tennessee had the diphtheria.
Oh, my bad, my bad.
Well, by the way, and I haven't said yet, but presumably his birth name is Thomas Lanier Williams. He actually chose the name Tennessee for himself as, like, you know, a pen name, a pseudonym or whatever. A nom de plume, and he picked it as an homage and acknowledgement of his Southern accent and Southern roots. It hits for me because I'm a Tennessee guy and he's from Mississippi, and it's like, I want people to know I'm from the South, but not Mississippi though, I guess. Right. You know, like, why not Mississippi Williams? I feel like Tennessee Williams, but it's like, I think you only think that because he became an icon and everybody's, you know what I mean? I feel like if he had picked Mississippi Williams, you know, I think it would have played just as fine. I'm glad he didn't. I'm just saying.
What did you said disease he had again?
Diphtheria.
I studied that in high school.
Really?
Diphtheria.
Diphtheria. Gotcha. Yeah. Okay.
I forgot about the at the end. It was
diphtheria. I didn't know you had that one, but that is.
You sure do, just in case.
It might be diphtheria.
I think it's diphtheria.
I think it is too, but it's got an H in between the P and the T, which I never noticed before. But anyway, I don't know if it's still out there kicking diphtheria. It was a bear there for a while. You had diphtheria, and, you know, it was back when people got rickets and
polio,
scabies, and of course polio, and all kinds of wild shit. We really have done some serious work on diseases, which we are currently, as a society, undoing, trying very hard to unravel. But we were hitting at it for a while. But anyway, he got diphtheria when he was a kid, which damn near killed him, and it made him, you know, a bit gay. Of a weakling. He turned him gay. Yeah, because, you know, but it did, like, it weakened him. He was sickly. He was a sickly kid.
Yeah.
And his East Tennessee hillbilly drunk ass daddy, that did not hit for him at all. You know, he found him to be pretty worthless and effeminate.
Wow.
And so they had, and, you know, but he went to town on Tennessee's mama all the time too. So she kind of hated him, and, you know, his daddy sort of didn't hit for anybody.
Other than his mom.
He hit his mom. Yeah. Yes. But he didn't hit for his mom though. But as a kid, they moved to St. Louis because his dad got a job at the International Shoe Company. Right, which I didn't know that, you know, they had that in St. Louis.
Louis Williams, that would have hit too.
Yeah, St. Louis Williams, that is pretty cool. I said on Well Read the other day when it's brought up, Drew asked about the Glass Menagerie, and I gave a little synopsis of it, and I said they were in a New York apartment. That's not true. It's in a St. Louis apartment. But, like, you know, his plays were huge on Broadway and stuff, and it's like about a shut-in in a city in an apartment. It just always felt like your mind don't go to St. Louis, in my opinion.
No, of course not. Anyway. But for him, that was the big city because he was from the goddamn Delta in Mississippi.
Yeah, so I mentioned he had a little sister, Rose. I don't know how prevalent this was, more than you would hope it would be, because we talked recently about, holy shit, the Kennedy girl, her name was Rose too, right? Rosemary?
Rosemary.
Well, same exact thing happened to Rose Lobotomy. Williams, Tennessee's sister. Yeah, she had mental problems. I think she had more legitimate mental problems than Rosemary Kennedy did. But, like, she had mental problems. She was troubled. She was a troubled girl, whatever. And then they fucking whipped her brain up with a stick when she was about 18. She lived the rest of her life in a home. Jesus. Tennessee took care of her, though, for the rest of her life and visited her frequently. You know, he loved his sister dearly, and that none of that was his doing. But, yeah, so, you know, I don't know how they was just scrambling women's brains back then. You know,
I saw a video the other day on Instagram of this doctor, like a modern day doctor, who was like, he was talking over some old videos of lobotomy patients and stuff like that. And he was making the argument for the fact that, like, in theory, sometimes it worked out, and he would show these videos of, like, someone before the lobotomy and someone after a successful one where, like, they were very normal. They just weren't fidgety as much or whatever. And he's like, the problem is that, like, they just got greedy. They just kept sawing their brain off. It's like, just stop. He would show these videos and go, just stop right there. And they're fucking fine.
Well, I remember you sent me a clip. It did not have a, maybe I just didn't turn the volume on. Was that that clip you sent me? Because you sent me a clip of old lobotomy footage before and after, but I didn't hear a doctor talking, but maybe I just didn't turn the sound on.
It was that clip he was talking over.
Oh, okay.
It was a separate one.
I just saw the clip, lobotomy footage before and after, and you sent it to me, and I opened it expecting, like, God, this is going to be hard to watch and fucked up. And it's not like it was easy to watch, but I watched it, and I texted you immediately, and I was like, dude, some of those kind of make it seem like lobotomy's hit.
Yeah, I think some of them worked out.
Some of the before and after, it seemed like it helped.
Well, they wouldn't have kept doing them if all of them ended up like the two Rosemarys, probably.
Right.
You know what I mean? But like,
right.
But it is one of those things where it's like, oh, the risk reward on this, I don't know.
So Tennessee went first. He ended up going to like three or four different colleges, kept dropping out and shit. The first one he went to was Mizzou, University of Missouri in Columbia. And he wrote a bunch of stuff there, wrote plays, essays, stories, and put them in writing contests, all this stuff. Didn't get much play. He got like an honorable mention in a college writing competition. He was the first freshman to ever do so, but still, like, he wasn't setting the woods on fire. He was in a fraternity in Missouri, and it didn't go great on account of everything about him, I guess. So he struggled, and he failed some military training course, and his drunk daddy pulled him out of college, which, you're fucking 19 or 20 at that point, right? Fuck off. But I guess maybe he was paying for it. I don't know. But anyway, he pulled him out of college and made him get a job. What'd you say?
Big shoe money.
Yeah. Well, he made him get a job in the shoe game, right? Okay. He was like, fuck it, you ain't hitting. Come sit at the shoe shop, at the shoe store, the shoe desk, whatever. Not a bad move
for a man of Tennessee's disposition. I've seen several of his kind in the shoe business, you know.
Yeah, well, he fucking hated it. Absolutely.
Right,
he hated it. Yeah, it was a 9-to-5 job, and the routine of it drove him insane. He apparently, during this time, and this is when, like, you're talking earlier about how hard me and you work. Appreciate that. But I read shit like this, and I'm like, goddamn. So he was working.
Oh, dude, we're not coal miners.
He was working all day, full-time job, real job. And when he would go home, he'd take coffee and cigarettes and go straight to his room, right? And just start typing, because he still lived with his mom at this point. And this is like his mother's account of it. He'd go upstairs to his room with his typewriter, coffee, and cigarettes. And she said she could hear the typewriter going literally all night long. Said sometimes she'd go up there to wake him up for work, and he'd be on the bed asleep in his clothes, like passed out, working at the typewriter and shit, right? And it's like, I ain't got it like that, dog.
Well, we did when we were younger, though, because like we're not coal miners, and I'm not suggesting that our lives could possibly be as hard as someone in the 1920s. But like, before we made it in comedy, now you were working at the DOE. I was working fucking construction and doing all this shit. And then I would go do shows at night and write my shit. So like, I'm saying I understand the whole work 9-to-5 and then you got to do your side hustle. That being said, it ain't been like that for me for going on 10 fucking years. So now if I had to do it, no. Fuck no. But when I was 19, you know, I had the energy.
None of the stuff he was writing was working, though. It wasn't hitting. He would sell a story here, a story there to some magazine or something, but nothing was really breaking through. So it wasn't really working out. And when he was 24 years old, he had a nervous breakdown, lost that shoe job, pissed his daddy off real big.
His dad beat him ever?
I mean, it just says he was like, you know, I mean, yeah, you know, I don't know how bad, but yeah, you know, he was one to throw hands, the elder Williams. And then Tennessee tried to go back to college. He went to Washington University in St. Louis, who years later would heavily recruit your boy to no avail. Suck on that, Washington University
football?
In St. Louis. No, academically, football. Yeah. Anyway, he wrote a play there, which they put on, and, you know, again, it's all right, but it didn't go that well. Then he transferred to Iowa Hawkeyes.
Hey, go Hawkeyes.
He finally graduated from Iowa with a BA in English in August of 1938. He went to New York City, studied drama. That's where he fell in love with theater, right? And he was like, plays, that's going to be the deal, right?
Yeah.
But he just wasn't hitting. He bounced around. He got like a – he got a grant, some big grant money from the Rockefeller family. I guess they used to do artistic grants to like write and put on a play. And he did. And
back when the rich used to kind of hit.
Right. And he did. And it didn't hit for nobody. Said play. Like, it was a failure. So after that, he moved to New Orleans, to work at the WPA, which was a New Deal government agency thing. So he lived in New Orleans for a while. And that play that I said he wrote that didn't hit, somebody in Hollywood saw it and was like, this guy's all right. So then he got a contract with MGM Studio for $250 a week. So that's pretty cool. It's always wild. It's like, when does this shit happen? Does this shit still happen? You know,
every now and then it just seems like it always happened because you exclusively hear about the successes, you know?
Right, exactly. It's confirmation, survivorship bias.
Yeah, the name of that. Yeah, right. Things.
Yeah. Anyway, but nothing really came of that either. Nothing came of pretty much anything he was ever doing in his 20s. He didn't hit at all in his 20s, but he was writing the whole time. But when he was 33, he finished The Glass Menagerie, which, you know, was going to be produced in New York on Broadway, directed by Elia Kazan, right?
Oh, yeah.
Huge Hollywood film director.
Yeah.
Directed by Elia Kazan and starring... Oh, wait, no. That's The Glass Menagerie. Sorry. Elia Kazan then also directed, I believe, his follow-up to The Glass Menagerie, which was A Streetcar Named Desire. Right?
Marlon Brando.
So he starring a then unknown actor named Marlon Brando. So Streetcar Named Desire, Tennessee Williams, Streetcar Named Desire kind of launched the career of Marlon Brando, which is wild to think about. Cause it's like, well, how fickle everything is in this game. Like, if Tennessee Williams had died as a child, right? Like, what would The Godfather have looked like?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, Brando might have ended up being Brando either way, maybe, but maybe not. Like, if A Streetcar Named Desire had never been written and he'd never been that role, he might have been fucking, you know, selling oranges or whatever for, you know, the rest of his adulthood, and some other guy would have played The Godfather or whatever. Maybe The Godfather never even gets made. I mean, who knows? That kind of butterfly effect shit is always wild to me to think about.
Well, I was going to say, I don't know if this came up in your research, but I could be wrong, but I'm fairly certain that when they went to cast the movie Streetcar Named Desire, they didn't want to use Marlon Brando because they didn't want to use people from the stage play because they were like, this is a completely different thing. And like Tennessee Williams behind the scenes fought for him. So like even more reason to support everything that you just said, you know?
Yeah. So now he's on a roll after Glass Menagerie and Streetcar Named Desire. And then the 40s and 50s was late 40s. Starting in 44 when Glass Menagerie came out, and then through the 50s, he was on a fucking roll. He had Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, The Rose Tattoo, Orpheus Descending, Night of the Iguana, Sweet Bird of Youth, and Summer and Smoke, all of which were big successes on Broadway, right? And he was crushing. During this time, he gains an affinity for hitting, as we call it, getting real drunk and drugged up, as it were. He probably had always been doing this, but you know, you start hitting in Broadway and stuff, you're going to get drunker, right? That's just how it goes.
Yeah, more money.
Right. And also he had, I didn't mention this earlier, but like when he was in like college and fraternity and stuff, he like tried to be straight, you know?
Yeah.
It probably happened a lot back then.
You had
didn't
to
take.
Dude.
You wouldn't believe. Right. Yeah, I know. Right. Yeah. Didn't take. Now he's in Broadway and he's hitting and he's still not openly gay because again, you couldn't be, but like
he found his people.
He found his people, but he also had his partner, you know, his business and writing partner, who was really, of course, his lover, Frank Merlo, and they were like inseparable through all that period of success. Him and his man Frank were together through all of it. Right, 40s, 50s, he's crushing. Frank's with him. He's gay. He's in New York. Things hit. Career's on fire. He's doing drugs and boozing, but he's hitting, so that's fine. He's just partying, having a good time.
Yeah, he's eccentric.
In the 1960s, Frank, his man, dies of cancer in 1963. His plays start bombing. And when they start bombing, they don't stop. He actually never had a hit play again after that.
Really?
It's so wild to think about.
Right.
Like
his muse was gone.
Right. And so, but he kept writing them and they kept failing. So now he's drinking and now it's sad. Right. Like, you know, that's how it goes. It's like if you're. Yeah. You know, if you do it well and you're fucking going hard on the extracurriculars, drugs and booze, then it's like, hell yeah. You know, what an era, right? Mm-hmm. You're just living like a rock star or whatever. But like when things start to spiral and you're doing the exact same things, it's like now it's, you know, upsetting and unfortunate.
Yeah, we only call people alcoholics who upset us. Like if someone's a really fun drunk, no one gives a shit if that guy reels it in. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so so he, you know, he continued to spiral into alcoholism and stuff. And that's the thing I was going to say is like, he had like real, real bad depression. He like wouldn't leave, you know, he'd lock himself up in a dark room, but he was still taking drugs and all this shit. One point he was like, right after Frank died, he had a period of quote near catatonic depression. So yeah, like,
can't you move.
Know, basically couldn't move. Right. And the people around him were like, you know, we need that next play, Junior, whatever they call in, they call in this guy, Dr. Max Jacobson, who apparently this dude was the original actual Dr. Feelgood. Heard the term Dr. Feelgood. Max Jacobson, I guess, was the first Dr. Feelgood, the origin of that. So they called Dr. Feelgood. It's like, this guy's so sad he can't get out of the bed. He's like, I got just the thing, you know, just
shoot
the ticket.
Him up
guess
with cocaine.
Absolutely. Yeah. Right. I mean, not cocaine, but a shitload of amphetamines. Right. And that's exactly what he gave him. And then Tennessee Williams was like, well, now I can't sleep. And he's like, don't you worry, fret not. Here's a shitload of a hardcore sedative. You just take this at the end of the day, right? The sedative was called Secanol. It's not around anymore. Boy, they used to have some serious hits back in the day, right?
I tell you what, buddy. You just read the label on a goddamn bottle of children's cold medicine, and I'm like, fuck me, that's Saturday night in Tunica.
Yeah, but it's also just so wild. I know this still happens in Hollywood and shit. I know it still does, but I feel like it's less so. But like back then, it's like, you know, like he was under a doctor's orders to be strung the fuck out on speed all goddamn day and then knock himself out cold with a fucking horse sedative every night or whatever. And it's like, he's got a prescription for that.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy.
Judy Garland, man, they did that shit to her too. They'd have a doctor come on set and fucking shoot her ass up. It's wild.
Yeah. And then as he got older, string of failures. You know, I mean, it's all kind of a bummer because he never, like I said, he never really got it back together professionally, and he kept trying and none of them ever really worked. And he had a lot of problems getting older because, you know, he was like, I don't hit no more. Nobody wants to fuck my butt no more. You know, that type of thing.
Oh, he could probably still find someone because I'm sure that he was still making money from the movies.
He did. There was particularly a Vietnam vet, an aspiring writer who was like 23 years old, gay guy named Robert Carroll.
What side of the war did he fight? Okay, Robert Carroll. Okay.
Yeah, and that became his boy toy, right? Because he is Tennessee Williams. He's rich and famous, whatever else. But, you know, like this dude, this kid, this little whippersnapper was kind of a piece of shit. He was using him and whatnot.
Of course.
So, like, that wasn't good either, right? And finally, in 1983, he was found dead at the age of 71 in his suite at the Hotel Elysier in New York City. The medical examiner first reported that he had choked to death from inhaling the plastic cap off a bottle of eye drops.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, what the fuck? Apparently, the report was later corrected to state that he had been using that cap to ingest barbiturates.
Yeah.
So measuring it into the cap, I guess, is what he was doing.
Maybe squirting it into his mouth or snorting it out of it or something.
I could see pouring the drug into the cap, but then you do a little shot of it or whatever, right?
But he dropped it.
Throw that in your mouth. Bro, if you're fucked up enough to like let the whole thing fall all the way down your throat, goddamn. But the thing he was using, though, the drug he was using in particular was Secanol, that sedative that Dr. Feelgood had prescribed him years before. It was a toxic level of that is what actually killed him.
Well, I got to tell you,
also, Secanol, that drug, just so you know real quick, that drug is the most frequently used drug in doctor-assisted suicide. it's like, yeah, not one to be fucked with, evidently, you know.
Well, I got to tell you, though, it sucks that he died the way he did, but, like, 71's a ripe old age for a depressed, failed writer who spent the back half of his life doing fucking drugs and being sad, because like the way you're describing him, because all that stuff, like his string of hits ran out when he was like probably what, 40, 50, something like that.
He hit in 45. He was 33 already. He didn't hit till he was 33. He hit at 33, and then he hit all the way through the 50s to the 60s. That was about 15 years. He was close to 50. He was close to 51, 52 when he fell off. Started to fall off.
22 years of being insanely depressed and on the most insane amounts of any drug possible
like, it's amazing that he didn't already OD, or I'm not trying to be grim, fucking kill himself. Cause that when an artist, like, dude, I genuinely can't imagine, like, if I went through a 22 year slump now, if they were making movies out of my old shit and I had money, I could deal with it a little bit better, but it still wears on a man.
For sure. And one little postscript, I thought this was fucked up. Well, a couple postscripts. One of them's fucked up, one of them's cool to me. The first one that's fucked up is he had a will when he died, and in his will it explicitly stated that his desire was to be buried at sea, in as close as possible to the exact geographic point where American poet Hart Crane, do you know who Hart Crane is?
I'm not familiar with Hart Crane.
Me neither, but apparently he was an American poet who I guess was one of Tennessee Williams' favorites. And this poet, Hart Crane, he jumped off a boat and killed himself, right? Okay. And Tennessee Williams wanted to be buried at sea where that dude killed himself, right? Morbid, but laid out explicitly. His brother, Dakin, charged with his estate, immediately disregarded that and just buried him by his mama in a cemetery in St. Louis.
Right? What a dick.
I know. Not cool, in my
opinion. Not cool at all.
Tennessee left most of his money, which was sizable. I thought this was cool. I had no idea of this. He went to three different colleges, and this wasn't one of them, but he left most of his money to the University of the South in Sewanee, Tennessee.
Yeah.
Often referred to as just Sewanee.
Yeah. Shout out Sean Bridgers.
The bulk of it had to remain in trust for his sister, Rose, with the mush brain, to provide for her care. And when she died, then the college got it, and that's what happened. She lived to 1996. After she died, Sewanee got about $7 million, which they used to fund a creative writing program at the university. Obviously, it's got a massive legacy. There's Tennessee Williams monuments and plaques in almost every city he ever lived in. He lived in a bunch of cities all around the world. He was always restless. He had wanderlust. He said he couldn't stay in one place for any amount of time, really. He lived in pretty much any hidden city you can imagine. He lived there, and they've commemorated his time there. He's on, many halls of fame, walks of fame, won Pulitzer Prizes. You know, he's considered to be one of the three great American playwrights. So, pretty good for a boy from the Mississippi mud, I'd say, especially one who was gay in the fucking 20s and shit. So
I would also say, yeah.
Yeah, apparently Eugene O'Neill and Arthur Miller are considered to be the triumvirate.
Arthur Miller, Death of a Salesman.
Of American playwrights. Death of a Salesman, A Streetcar Named Desire, and Eugene O'Neill's Long Day's Journey Into Night.
There you go.
Are often named as, the three best plays ever written, at least in this country anyway. So there you have it.
Well, how about that?
Yep, Tennessee Williams, go Vols.
All right. Yeah, I got to read some of these plays. Well, hey.
Let's shift gears hard.
Let's do it.
Akon.
Akon, I will be back to talk about Akon right after this.
This here episode is sponsored by Blue Chew. Let's talk about sex and wieners and stuff. Guys, remember the days when you were always ready to get down anytime, any damn time, day or night? I sure do. Ain't like that anymore, right? Now you need some alone time to get ready for some together time if you've just had some, you know what I'm saying. But now you ain't got to worry about that because you can increase your performance and get all that extra confidence back in bed. Listen up. BlueChew.com. Blue Chew is a unique online service that delivers the same active ingredients as Viagra, Cialis, and Levitra, but in chewable tablets and at a fraction of the cost. You can take them anytime, day or night, so you can plan ahead or you can be ready whenever an opportunity pops up. The process is simple. You just sign up at BlueChew.com, consult with one of their licensed medical providers, and once you're approved, you'll receive your prescription within days. The best part? It's all done online, so no visits to the doctor's office, no awkward conversations, no waiting in line at the pharmacy. Blue Chew's tablets are made in the U.S. of A, prepared and shipped direct to your door in a very discreet package. Cho, tell us about your package.
Well, I tell you what, I won't go too far into detail on my package, but a lot of people say, Corey, you've used Blue Chew. Does it work? And I'm like, does it work? It makes my dick harder than changing the channel when Shawshank is on. Hell yeah, it works. I love it. I love that it comes in a discreet package. That's my favorite part. I don't have to go to the pharmacy because, as I've told y'all a bunch, I went to school with a girl at the pharmacy, and I don't need her knowing my business. Now, here's the deal. You might be thinking, okay, but like, my weenie does okay. Do I need this? Here's the deal. Your weenie might do okay, but is okay really good enough? You can have a guaranteed stiffy whenever it's time to get down, baby. It's absolutely fantastic. My wife's favorite day of the month is when that little white envelope shows up because she knows it's about to go down. Here's the deal. Blue Chew wants to help you have better sex. Discover your options at BlueChew.com. Chew it and do it. And we got a special deal for our listeners. Try Blue Chew for free. That can't be right. No, it is absolutely free. When you use our promo code POA at checkout, just pay $5 shipping. That is $5 for a guaranteed stiffy. That's BlueChew.com, promo code POA to receive your first month for free. Visit BlueChew.com for more details and important safety information. And we thank Blue Chew for sponsoring the podcast and getting us a guaranteed way to use our wiener. Skew! DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL playoffs, is bringing you an offer that'll help make the playoffs electrifying. New customers can bet $5 on any game and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. A lot of cool ones coming up. We got you got the Texans plus 9.5 over the Ravens. You got the Packers are getting 9.5 points against the 49ers. And by God, the Buccaneers coming off hot are getting 6.5 points over the Detroit Lions. Trey, tell them how they can put in all this stuff and make some money.
What you got to do is download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use the code POA. New customers can bet just $5 to get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Pretty sweet. Only on DraftKings Sportsbook when you use the code POA. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/football for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Y'all step into 2024 with confidence thanks to Manscaped, where resolutions are met and hairs are neatly kept. As the new year approaches, why not make self-improvement a breeze by keeping your body well-groomed? Introducing Manscaped's Performance Package 5.0, the ultimate all-inclusive kit designed to help you feel clean-cut and confident as you ort. Featuring the powerhouse Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra, this next-gen trimmer ensures precision and ease when tackling your toughest hairs. So, kick off 2024 with a trim above the rest and use code POA at manscaped.com for 20% off and free shipping. Y'all, I've been extolling the virtues of Manscaped for a long time. I love the Lawnmower. Absolutely love it. I love their hedge trimmer. But honestly, the most important part to me is the ball deodorant and the toners and all that stuff, because, you know, when you get out the shower in about 5 minutes, you go right back to smelling like balls, and Manscaped helps me stay fresh. But their beard trimmer, sincerely, greatest thing ever, because I've got a setting on there. I don't have to have guards. I just clickety-clack, boom, beard. Boom hair, boom neck. There we go. It's wonderful stuff. Trey, tell them all about the Performance Package 5.0.
The Performance Package 5.0 Ultra is here, and let me tell you, it's got futuristic tendencies. Included in this bundle is the brand new Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra, the Weed Whacker 2.0 ear and nose hair trimmer, and the essential aftercare products like the Crop Soother Ball Aftershave Lotion and Crop Preserver Anti-Chafing Ball Deodorant, and two free gifts. Their fifth generation lawnmower features two interchangeable next gen skin safe blade heads, a standard one for taking a little off the top, and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. Did we mention that it's waterproof too? Because it is. Manscaped also threw in two free gifts, the Boxers 2.0 and the Shed 2.0 toiletry bag. Resolutions may come and go, but a well-groomed you is here to stay with Manscaped's latest and greatest. Start the new year right, because when you look good, you feel good. Manscaped, helping you sculpt the best version of yourself for the year ahead. New year, new you, definitely a new trimmer. Manscaped's got your grooming resolutions covered. So get 20% off and free shipping with the code POA at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com when you use the code POA. Happy New Year to your balls. Let's do it. Pop culture with Paparazzo. Paparazzi, Cho, Paparazzo. What was it? What we call you?
Paparazzo.
I don't think we did, though, but that's what we should have. That's what we call
it. Paparacho. Which sounds like a noodle.
Yeah. Anyway, on Akon, I'm looking forward to this because I've heard, it's weird that I haven't looked further into it because I've just heard wild ass shit about Akon every now and then over the years. You know, he was like a pretty successful, but not like superstar icon status, but like pretty damn successful guy in the world of hip hop and R&B in the 2000s, which was when we were in our 20s. So, you know, Akon certainly hit for me. But then vanished mostly, except he didn't. I guess he'd been over there in Africa making money and being a king or some shit like that. It's wild, right? Like,
it's wild.
Yeah. So anyway, go ahead.
Well, before we get started on Akon, I would like to play a game that I've made up with you. And this game is called Akon or Conway. And it is where you have to decide whether this quote came from Akon or Conway Twitty. Are you ready to play, Trey?
Yeah.
Okay. Starting out, this quote. You learn the most from life's hardest knocks.
Conway.
That is Conway. There you go. Okay. Thank you. Point on the board for Trey. Next one. Fads are the kiss of death. When the fad goes away, you go with it.
Akon.
That is Conway Twitty.
Shit.
Right. Yeah, that is Conway Twitty. All right.
Felt like it applied to Akon to me. You
I know.
The
yeah,
fad thing.
Yeah, I know. That's why I put it on there. I'm a polygamist. I can afford to have as many wives as I can afford to have. All Africans believe in it. My dad has four wives.
I mean, I'm going to go with Akon.
Yeah, that's Akon. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's Akon.
That would have been a hell of a twist there.
I know, right? Okay, whatever obstacle comes your way, you got to be prepared to jump over it. And I think that's what separates the legends from the regular artists. It's all in how you manage that success and how you deal with the controversy.
I mean, I don't know. That could be either one of them. I'll say Akon.
It is Akon.
All right.
Okay, here's another one. If you put that straitjacket on me, I'm going to pull your endocrine system out of your body.
Damn it. That could be both of them too, I feel like, but Conway.
That's actually Gary Busey. I forgot to mention that there's a couple Gary Busey quotes in here. That's on me. That's my fault. Yeah. Okay.
If I had known Gary Busey was an option, that would have been a no-brainer right there.
Of course. Eminem is the greatest ever.
Akon.
Conway Twitty about snacks.
God damn it. That ain't real. You made that up.
No, okay. It's not real. I made it up.
Okay.
Five parts of my brain contain alien power. Whatever I do or say cannot be denied on the intergalactic highway of existence.
Akon?
Gary Busey. One more time. Okay, this is a quote from childhood. What I remember the most really was just running wild there, barefooted, swimming in dirty lakes, and selling fruit.
Conway.
Nope, that is Akon. I did leave off the part of the quote where he says, picking mango trees, hoping not to get caught because they don't take kindly to thieves in Africa. But that first part does sound like it could be either one. Okay. The moment artists can just do what they love to do, then music will go right back to where it used to be. I mean, back in the 60s and 70s.
Conway?
Akon.
God damn it.
You know the most dangerous thing in the water? A shark fart.
Akon?
Busey.
God damn it.
This is going better than I thought it was going to go. I let my eyes deceive me from the start. They told me I wanted her more than I wanted you. Guess my eyes were bigger than my heart.
Conway.
That is Conway. Good job, Trey. A good way to lose weight is to put salt on your ass and go to a petting zoo. But stay away from goats because I've seen them fornicate with a mailbox.
Gary Busey.
That is Gary Busey. Okay. I consider myself a Texan. I grew up in Texas and Oklahoma.
Conway.
Gary Busey.
All right.
Okay. One more. Faith gives me the ability to rise above anything because what is true in the spiritual realm is forever true. It cannot be denied.
Akon.
No, Gary Busey, surprisingly. It was a tame quote from Gary. Okay, I said that was the last one. One more. There's a woman in Arkansas that's such a bad cook that a swarm of flies got together and repaired her screen door.
Conway.
Gary Busey! All right. Trey, I didn't keep up with your points, but in my opinion, we all won.
Alrighty.
Okay, so Akon. All right, so here's a couple things that I thought would be interesting to talk about. At first, was just some things that I heard Akon say on his episode of Club Shay Shay. It was not as crazy of an episode as Cat Williams, but it had some stuff in there. So Locked Up was like Akon's biggest, like his first big hit. We all remember, right?
Right.
Well, before Locked Up became a hit, like he was nobody, and he would tour around performing in prisons doing this song because he wanted to cultivate like a reputation for being that or whatever. And so he's like a lot
of
it's
funny to make. Okay. Cause the chorus of that song got locked up. They won't let me out.
Right.
Yeah. Like he went into prisons, sang that song, and then they let him out. Right.
Yeah. Right.
Like, singing in front of all these prisoners, they won't let me out. And he's like, "All right, I'm out of here."
Peace,
and then
guys.
He leaves. Yeah. Right. He goes back out to the fucking the car or whatnot while they still got to sit in there. So that makes it funny to me. Yeah.
Well, he helps. So before all this is going on, he helped start a concert series at Rikers Island. Like he went to Rikers Island and he was like, "Hey, listen. I want to do a thing where like I perform for the prisoners and stuff, like I'll take care of everything." And they were like, "Yeah, okay, whatever." It became so popular that like it kept going, but the song Locked Up was so popular that he sent it to the radio and everybody in New York was like, "Man, fuck this. I don't really like it," or whatever. But what happened was he got so popular in that prison and a couple other prisons that the prisoners would call their parents, right? And then have their parents put them on a three-way call with the radio station, and the prisoners would request that song. And that happened so many times that they were like, "Well, goddamn, this might be a thing." And then yada yada, it became a thing. And that was all from like a grassroots Akon situation.
Damn. Never do that.
This is another crazy thing about how his business mind works. Because dude, his business mind, wild. Which like that's not uncommon with a lot of rappers. Like a lot of rappers, you'll see like Chamillionaire, for instance. Chamillionaire hadn't had a hit in a very long time, but like he's worth more money than most of the dudes doing it right now because he's got such a good business acumen. But Akon noticed early in his career that you would work really hard to put out a single, right? And that single, whether it be on a CD or a tape or whatever, would cost, people could buy it for $1.99. And these were 4-minute long singles. But he noticed that ringtones were being sold for $4.99 and they were 15 seconds long. So he was like, "Hold on, I'm on the wrong side of this shit." So he based his whole approach to song making based on what would hit as a ringtone. So he would start with the ringtone first and then build the entire song around it, making sure that like, I've got to get all the hits into 15 seconds and make things exclusively that people would want banging out of their Nokia phone.
I mean, that's wild as hell. That's like, that's like some Quibi shit, except it hit. It worked.
Right.
And it's like, it sounds so dated now, but in the time he was doing it, it was, good move. But I didn't know. Well, I mean, yeah, I guess they would. Why wouldn't they get a cut of the, right? So the artist gets a cut either way of the sale of the CD or of the sale of a ringtone.
Right.
But there's more money in ringtones.
There was for a single at least.
They were huge at the time. Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I guess his whole thing would be like, I don't even have to put out a full album to make a full album's worth of money because I'll sell the single, but also like if a million people get my ringtone, fucking ka-ching, ka-ching. He also said something that I didn't agree with. He said that Chris Brown had the potential to be as big as Michael Jackson. He was just surrounded by a lot of idiots. And I was like, well,
the people he was surrounded by didn't punch Rihanna in the face. You know what I mean?
Dude, Chris Brown must, like,
got dirt.
I don't know. Yeah, either he is that good. Or, like, right, but not on MJ's level. But, like, dude, he's fucking beloved by, yeah. like, his peers and shit. Nothing sticks to him. He's yeah. had, obviously, the Rihanna one's the most famous, but that's not the only one, dude. He's done really awful shit, and it's come out publicly on multiple occasions, and none of it ever touches him, and he remains this huge superstar, and everybody else just gushes over him. Fucking yeah. Lizzo, before she had her own scandals, Miss Positivity, and everybody hits and treat everybody good or whatever. She said that, you know, Chris Brown was like her favorite artist and favorite human being on planet Earth and all this stuff. You know what I mean? It's like, I just don't get it. Like, I mean, he's fine. Like, you know what I mean? Like, musically, he's fine, but, like, he don't hit that hard. In my right. You can find somebody else that hits as hard as he hits pretty hard at, like, with it. Well, no, he don't hit that hard either way, you know, with his fist right. or musically. It's just that he always focuses on women in both regards, I guess. But that's the other part of it, too. He's got all these chick fans out there that be up in the comments, like, you know,
he could punch me.
You can black my eye anytime. Yeah, right, exactly, which is insane. But, yeah, I don't know. It's a weird thing.
Well, another Chris thing Brown. That makes it doubly weird is because, and please understand, let me preface this by saying I'm not suggesting that one woman is worth more than any other woman, but it ain't like he just punched some lady from the club. He punched Rihanna, who she is also beloved. You know right. what I mean? Like, that yeah. makes it crazy. Like, everyone, it would be one thing if, like, Rihanna, everybody thought Rihanna was a huge bitch and they're like, eh, whatever. But, like, she's a fucking superstar that everyone loves.
Yeah, it is wild. Joe, you got Akon's birth name on there?
I don't, but I was listening to him say it. Do you have it in front of you?
Yeah.
I was listening to him say it on Club Shay Shay, and I was like, I'm never going to remember how to pronounce that. Please try.
He got about 14 middle names, yep. looks like, yep. Three of which are Lou, back to back to back. And I'm sure it's probably pronounced Timae, I guess, because mm-hmm. these are all African words, but it looks like two of his middle names is like Booga Time.
Yeah, Booga Time. Like, I remember hearing Booga him Time. Say that on Shay Shay.
Anyway, his birth name apparently was, Alala Yundamala Booga Time Buru Naka Lululu Badara Ekantiam.
Here's my thing on that, respectfully to the culture, because obviously, like, look, people from different places have different names. And I know that over there, that's their word, so they're not going to have trouble pronouncing it. But it's the sheer length of the name. You know what yeah. I mean? Like, because, like, over here, if you name someone, you know, with our language, I'd be able to pronounce it. But, like, that's like fucking, 28 letters in your goddamn name?
It's a lot, you know, to be fair, like British aristocracy and stuff. I mean, they do that with like English names, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
It's almost
John Michael Cornelius. Yeah, you're right.
Well, like Ray Fiennes mm-hmm. is from an aristocratic family over there. His full name, I knew it was something, but I looked it up. His full name is Rafe Nathaniel Twistleton Wickham Fiennes. Right. So, okay. you know,
well, I stand corrected.
Long.
That is anyway, pretty long.
Go ahead.
It makes sense that motherfucker came from aristocracy. I love him, by the way. I'm not saying that in a bad way, but like,
yeah, he rules.
He does rule. Speaking of Chris Brown and bad shit, though, I've been lambasted a few times, and I think with complete merit from the airheads on, like, I'll talk about somebody, but I'll sort of gloss over any bad shit that they did. Usually because this podcast is fun and light, but some of these are very wild. And so I will talk about a couple of the controversies that Akon has experienced in his life. For one, a lot of people say that, like, he never was locked up. So in 2007, Akon claimed to have spent 3 years in prison. He's doing an interview from 1999 to 2002, which would have been around the time Locked Up came, for being part of an auto theft ring. However, apparently to some people, it was later revealed that he had not been convicted of any crime and did not serve any time in prison. So, like, he keeps saying it was true, but, like, there's apparently facts that's like, he never was in prison.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I could see that being a problem, I guess, if that was part of his whole allure at the time. Yeah, lore, and it was a lie. Me being a cracker, I never once thought that he had actually been in prison. Was I supposed to hear the song Locked Up and think, damn, he wrote this from a cell? Because right. I never did.
Yeah, because like, I love the song, but it's not as like go hardy as most like prison type things are. Like DMX talks about jail. I'm like, yeah, I believe this motherfucker.
Yeah. Yeah. All you N-words that's been to jail before, suck my dick, for example. That's what the dog do. Yeah, right. Anyway.
I wish they put that on his tombstone. In 2008, Akon was criticized for his comments about African-Americans and Africans. He claimed that Africans are more pure than African-Americans and that African-Americans have a false sense of entitlement. Pretty rough stuff from Akon.
I mean, you could, I mean, if you just take the African part out, if he just said, like, I mean, you know, Americans are pretty entitled, ain't we, generally?
Right.
Like, yeah. I think. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, America is what's different there, right, to me.
Yeah. No, I agree with you.
Yeah. So, you know.
So,
if it was a white dude saying black people are fucking entitled, that's obviously a problem. But, like, an African guy being like, I think the black people that got in America, I don't know. I feel like a lot of people think Americans are entitled, is all I'm saying. He Agreed. Just happens to be a black dude from Africa, so it's like that's how right. it came out when he said it. But, like, I don't think that that's a, you know, uncommonly held belief or anything.
The pure part is a little rough, but, yeah, I hear you.
Well, yeah, I guess that's true.
In 2010, Akon faced backlash from a Buddhist group in Sri Lanka for his music video with David Guetta. Sexy Chick. This video featured a Buddha statue in the background, which was seen as disrespectful to Buddhism. As a result, the Sri Lankan government decided not to issue him a visa to enter the country. They can kind of get fucked with that.
David Guetta is that white DJ who did that George Floyd tribute and said, shout out to his family, right before dropping the beat real hard on that rooftop party or whatever. So
I need you to repeat what you just said because you cut off right after David Guetta.
Is that white British DJ who did that George Floyd tribute where he goes, shout out to his family or whatever, and then dropped the beat real hard on that rooftop party thing that went like viral after George Floyd died. Cause he's like, you know, he does that and he just starts vibing and shit.
Shout out to his family.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's he unironically did that. It's very funny.
Jesus Christ. In October 2023, though, so, you know, if Akon was lying about his former crimes, he maybe is making up for lost time. In October 2023, Akon made headlines when he was accused of running a drug trade and pirating TV and music. He was also charged with domestic abuse, unlicensed use of a handgun, and, Trey, possessing a military-grade tank.
That's illegal? Where did this happen?
You know, I don't have where it happened, but you wouldn't think. Okay,
I used to work Arnold with had a guy. Tank. Yes, Arnold has a tank. I used to work with a guy. I don't think he couldn't convince his wife, but like when a guy worked with the DOE, old ex-Marine dude in his 50s, he was trying so hard to buy a tank, right? Like,
yeah,
like an actual tank, and I'm pretty sure in this country, like. There's some permits, some forms you got to fill out or something, but I think you can finagle a way to own a tank legally.
Okay.
I think, because that's how insane we are. Other countries, maybe, I have no idea, probably not, but
maybe we got lost in the wording here because it says an unlicensed use of a handgun and possessing a military class tank. Maybe he didn't have the proper license for
right.
it. He just yeah. like got a tank from a dude, which like seems like what Akon would do. Probably.
It does. Yes. So your tank license, sir. Yeah.
This was recently, but I didn't hear a goddamn thing about it, which is wild because these two dudes are like, you know, very popular. But in November 2023, Akon was embroiled in a legal battle with Suge Knight. Not a guy you want to be in battle with, because Suge Knight accused him of rape.
Of Suge?
I surely not.
No way. There ain't no fucking way Suge Knight would publicly say that a much more diminutive man had successfully raped him. Like, that's not.
I would say it's the rape of a woman, which, like, two things spring to mind. Like, I don't think Suge Knight gives a shit about that. But the second one is, like, maybe
he's
like
mad because he was gonna rape her, you know what I mean?
That's what I was suggesting is like someone was like, yo, Suge Knight raped this girl, and Suge Knight was like, that was Akon, and just like, you know,
right,
rolled out.
So I got to read two things back to back because they go together, in my opinion, because I was read the first one first and I was like, well, maybe he didn't know. In 2007, Akon was involved in a controversial performance at the Zen nightclub in Trinidad and Tobago. He simulated sex, this is gross, y'all, with a 15-year-old girl as part of a fake contest. This actually led to criticism from right-wing political commentators, and I think we all know why, that they cared that he did it. But I was like, okay, all right, it is possible that, like, there was a girl at his concert that didn't look 15 and he just didn't ask any questions. However, in December 2023, and I didn't see this motherfucker on the list, but Akon faced backlash because he was listed on a lot of Epstein's flight logs, which led to speculation about his involvement with Epstein. Now, you know.
Okay. So Akon was on the flight list?
He was on the flight list. Now, again, you know, Akon was super into, like, islands and traveling and trying to figure out how to make his own city, which I'll get to more in depth probably on next week's episode because we're running out of time. But, like, yeah, I don't know. I don't know, dude. You know, it don't look good. But I figure I had to bring all that up because I know that in the comments when I just start talking about all this fucking, like, awesome shit Akon's doing, there's going to be some people that are like, you really skipped over all the that shit. So, I will briefly touch on this futuristic city that he's building, and then next week, is it cool with you if I wrap it all up?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Sure. So, here's the deal. Akon is, he's a Senegalese, Senegalese American. That's where he's from. And he's building a futuristic city in Senegal. Yep. Is that what it's called? Yep, Senegal, yep. West Africa, called Akon City. So the city is, they're estimating it's going to cost $6 billion to do this.
Right.
And, like, I agree that it would probably take $6 billion to create a city. But I'm like, I know Akon ain't got it like that. And I know that you don't have to have all the money. Like, you get investors and stuff. But, like, and this is the reason that I want to come back next week and talk, because there's some people reporting that he's facing a lot of backlash because one of his investors is a mysterious investor that they can't figure out who this fucking guy is. And by that nature alone, they're like, okay, the fact that we don't know anything about this guy and Akon won't even release his name means that there's some shady shit going on. So I'm going to try to get on, like, the back pages of the internet and try to find some shit out. But some things that we do know, they're going to have, I don't know if you knew this, Akon City will have a cryptocurrency called Akon, and that's the only money you're going to be able to use there. But they're, and he's done a lot of shit before. Like, he was involved in an entrepreneurial thing for Africa called Lighting Africa, which, like, they're providing electricity to rural areas in Africa using solar energy. He's also invested in a diamond mine in South Africa, purportedly to, like, get rid of all the blood diamond type shit and make it more like, you know, hey, we don't have to be doing it that way or whatever. So, like, on the surface, Akon seems to really be doing a lot of good in Africa. So I can't decide if all the shit that I'm going to talk about next week is, like, rooted in a lot of truth, or if it's just like, man, as soon as you try to do something good, people try to bring you fucking down. But anyways, in summation, for this week, yeah, I don't know. Like I said, 50 Cent has had a nice post-rap career with all of his businesses and shit. But if all of this goes through, it's one of the wildest, like, back 40s of an artist career I've ever heard of, because he's essentially trying to build Wakanda, but for real.
Right. Yeah. That's what I was going to say. The Wakanda thing, it does seem like that, but you put a gun to my head, make me make a prediction here. I would say the same thing I'd say about that. You know about that Saudi Arabian city they're supposed to be building? That's like a gigantic line. It's like a line city, like two big walls. They're narrow and then it's long and the city is built that way.
Narrow.
Yeah. I can't remember why. Economy of space or something. It's a solar power, whatever else. It's this wild, super futuristic thing. That shit ain't never going to happen. And I don't think Akon City ever going to happen either.
Sure.
Yeah. It's one of those. Somehow he's gotten a bunch of money out of these investors. He's fleeced some people or something somehow. And they, like, I don't think that'll ever come to pass if I had to put money on it.
Well, that's, you're setting up what I want to talk about next. But before we go, I did want to mention, because it kind of makes sense with what you just said. I just saw today that Russia is trying to make a new city that will appeal to and potentially house conservative Americans. They want to make a conservative America utopia.
Hell yeah.
You know what I mean? So, like, it's looking good.
Keeping on, Russia. I love that shit.
That's all I'm saying. All right, let's get to some air mail and stay tuned for next week for the thrilling conclusion of Akon and his city. Subject line, Iron Eyes and Stephen Hawking. Hello, I just recently listened to the episode, and I cannot believe y'all never used the term spaghetti Western as it related to Giuseppe Di Corti. Giuseppe Di Corti, right? That's how you say it?
Yeah, but I didn't remember his name being Giuseppe. I thought it was Oscar. Iron Eyes Cody, they called him Oscar. It was some other Italian name. It wasn't Giuseppe, though. It might have been Cody's name, I guess. Either way, whatever. I dropped the ball a couple times on that because we never said spaghetti Western. We also talked about, do Indians cry? And someone else pointed out to us, it's like, yeah, you ever heard of the Trail of Tears, you fucking dipshits? It's like, oh, right, yeah. How the hell are you going to talk about the concept of Indians crying and never even consider the Trail of Tears? Hell, even in Tennessee, even in Clay County Public Schools, we learned about the Trail of Tears, you know.
Here's why.
Crowning achievement, Tennessee's own Andrew Jackson. So,
anyway. Old Hickory. Well, here's why we didn't bring up the Trail of Tears. We forgot because we do not associate Native Americans purely with one of the worst things that happened to them in their past. We do not think that they are defined by their tragedy. We more think that they are defined by their pride and spirit. And that's why we forgot, not because we're idiots. Anyways, right. Subject line, my nasty Nana. Howdy, Corey and Trey. Trey's video regarding the British mammal enjoying watching two gentlemen suck each other off and your subsequent observations that, yes, our grandmothers probably were pretty nasty got me to thinking about my own unpleasant realization that, yes, the elderly fuck. My father's mother died 2 weeks after he was born, so I had no grandmother on my father's side. My mother's father died in 1970 when I was 5, so the only grandparent I ever really knew was my mother's mother, who was born in 1904, making her a spry and horny Italian lady now widowed at age 66. Having that beautiful Italian skin that runs in our family, her complexion belied her age, and she was blessed with many suitors in her widowed state. She outlived 3 of them and was dating her 4th in 1991 at age 87, the year I graduated med school. She was able to come to the graduation, and at the terminus of that trip, she cried, saying that because of her age, I would never see her again. Woof. Wanting to prove her wrong, my first vacation in internship, I flew out to Western Massachusetts to spend some time with her that October. I met her current beau, whose name was Gus, and I remember him distinctly. He seemed like a pleasant enough fellow, and like all of her prior boyfriends, significantly younger than she. On a trip to town with Nana, as Gus hung around at her home on King Street in Orange, Massachusetts, I found myself in a situation I had never been in all of my life, having a relationship discussion with my grandmother. She launched into it quite freely, as though I were her most trusted confidant and lifelong friend, lamenting that she was pretty disappointed that Gus can't do anything down there, implying that he was impotent. And without missing a beat, she said something I recall to this day. I never knew you could have love without sex. I had never thought of Maria Troani Angelina Rathburn, as I don't know why I'd rolled the R, as a sex-starved horn dog, but there it is. After the shock wore off, I decided to play along and turned to her and said, "Well, Nana, he has a tongue, doesn't he?" She smiled and giggled like she had just been caught farting. On the flight home, I thought, yay, I'm going to have a libido until the day I die. But upon further contemplation, lamented, wait, maybe that's a bad thing. That is my friend Kim, who is a Substacker and a woman that I love. So there you go, Trey. Some people fuck when they're old.
Some people do fuck. Mammals be fucking. I mean, you know, it's become
frozen. I need to keep talking because Trey hasn't unfrozen yet. But yeah, you know, having that libido. By the way, our friend there, Gus, could have used some Blue Chew, which is a sponsor of this show. There you go, Trey. Old people be banging. Plug your shit.
Yeah, they do be banging. I mean, I was going to say, everybody at this point has heard. It was like a thing. I feel like it first came out in about 2003-ish, and everybody was like, what? And then since then, everybody on Earth has heard the little factoid about how, you know, STDs run rampant in old folks' homes.
Yep.
Because they all be fucking in there.
Of course they do.
And, you know, so... Anyway, shout out to my mama in the Clay County Hope Folks Home. Anyway, come see me live at TreyCrowder.com. Be in Charlottesville tomorrow. Torch is optional. Come see me. Then I'm going to Orlando and Tampa and then D.C. and Virginia and a bunch of other places. Go to TreyCrowder.com, and I'll see you out there. Love you. Bye.
Hey, buy our book around here and over yonder. It's available wherever you get your books. And, yes, there's an audio version. And, yes, we read it. Baby. And also for more of my musings, Kim, who I just read her email there, she is a member of my Substack and she can write in and tell you how great it is, because it is. You can sign up for my Substack at bonuscorey.com. Full length audio dramedies, essays, videos, rant podcast, anything you love from me, just in longer form over there. All right, stay fancy.
Mazer fuckers.
Here's Lydia Loveless.
1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. Royalty and rednecks are alike. They both like cutting and picking fights. Biscuits and baked beans where they don't belong. Sit on down with Corey and Trey and learn some fancy shit today. We'll laugh a little even when they're wrong. They'll take you to a magical place where if you call someone a cut, nobody cares. They keep it debonair at putting on airs, putting on airs, putting on airs, putting on airs.
NMLS number 65084, equal housing lender. Woo!
As an adult, don't we all miss spring break? Nothing like taking a week off from all your responsibilities. Well, here's the next best thing for adults, a spring break from house payments. SaveWithConrad.com can help you get rid of all your credit card debt just like that. We're routinely helping our listeners save $500, $600, $700, even $800 a month. And you don't need perfect credit or money out of your pocket to do this, but check this out, no house payments for 2 months at SaveWithConrad.com.